With our special guest tonight, Jim Sparks, we're talking about his life, his evolution as an abductee. Back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Jim, tell me a little bit about the human hybrid program. What do you think's going on?
Well, I knew at a time that it was very heavy. They were heavily into it, at least the scope that I got to see as part of their agenda. And back in the late 80s into the mid 90s, they were working on something solely, and I can explain a big part of it that'll make sense about it, which was they were extracting, they started off by extracting ova from women and semen from men. And the idea was for an insurance policy. And again, this is all part of the message. The insurance policy was, in the event, according to them, we as humans, we start off, I think they've got tens of thousands, maybe even millions of years of knowing us all over this cosmos, of what we're like to the T. We start off in small groups, maybe villages, and then it culminates to a city civilization. Mm-hmm. And we may go through thousands of years, start to get the science together, the population explodes, and then we get to a certain point where we can either self-destruct or we can evolve to joining the galactic neighborhood. Self-destruct not necessarily meaning that we just go backwards. We go into a state, sort of a militant state, where, you know, there's no free thought, there's no arts, there's no just hard, terrible things. So we go one way or the other, and we may even hurt ourselves to the point of wiping most of us out. And that's a common trait with us. We are right on the cusp. We're in a very rare time, and there's much interest in us because we are the scales are can tip fractionally one way or the other and go into the dark or go into the light and join them. Now, going back to the hybrid question, as an insurance policy, in case we do go the route of self-destructing, then they wanted to create a human being that would be more, and they finally, after all those years, got it down, that would be much more intelligent, much more environmentally sensitive, telepathic, and can speak at the same time. They developed a human that's a bit smaller, a bit thinner, hair a bit thinner, and in the event that we're not here or we do something like that, that would be something that would be the next stage to populate the planet. Now, I want to take all the paranoid fears away from all these years of experience and how I got to where I am and why I can say what I can say. Okay. With the credibility that I built. It is not to take over the world.
You're convinced of that?
Yeah, definitely. It's not to take over the world. And so that's what they're there for. And, you know, my bet is, you know, I mean, the world is negative, George. You know that as well as I do. And
yes,
we got a lot of positive people, but I still think that we can do it. And so that explains it. So that was a heavy campaign for years. And, you know, I got to see their handiwork once I was free to move around, which I'm going to lead to now, because I got the freedom to move around on board. I got the freedom to see things and interact.
Was it a big craft inside?
At that point, yes, and that's something I'll get into. But here's something I think you're going to really enjoy. I don't even know if I said it on air before, but I was dead set, as you know, as I was saying earlier about building this. They were building a trust. They were so much smarter than me as to how it was going to go. Anyway, I was dead set on killing an alien. That's how much anger and hatred I
Jeez.
Had. I was going to kill one. And I bought a .357 Magnum at the time. This was, again, over 20 years ago. And when they did come into the house, to escort me that way. They primarily paralyzed me, but I did have a little freedom at first because they would take me kind of by surprise. And I didn't realize what they were doing as testing me in this way. But on one particular evening, they came in. Again, they have the ability, they create a field where they can walk through solid matter. They came in through the living room. I was sitting on the easy chair, and I kept this loaded gun on the table, on the side table. And two of them walked into the house, and instead of immediately putting me in a paralytic state where I can walk for the abduction scenario, I could move around, and they were walking around the house and looking at stuff. And I picked up the pistol, and I said, here's my chance. And I was scared to death. Anyway, I picked up the pistol, and one was walking, and one actually came in from the kitchen, like looking at what stuff in the kitchen is like, which was a highly unusual scene. And he stepped in right in front of me where my television set is, and he was looking at the television set with his back turned to me. And I took the pistol and I held it out. I cocked it, and I screamed out, I'm going to kill you. And I put my finger on the trigger, and I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't pull the trigger.
Did they stop you?
No. I just couldn't make myself do it. And that was a freedom right there. Then they abducted me. They got me on board. Now I'm hating their guts. I don't know why they're doing this. I didn't kill the alien. Now I'm on board. And then they bring out a large jar-like glass thing with 18 inches in perimeter covering a farm ant, bigger than a bull ant. And this ant is crawling around in this jar. And then the telepathic instructions were sketch the symbol for kill, and sketch the symbol for kill, and that'll kill the ant. I said, no, I'm not going to kill anything for you. And then again, sketch the symbol for kill and kill the ant. And I went, no. And I kept screaming out, no, no, no. Again, there was a thump in the on board, which is an air pressure thing that creates a little pain. And I wouldn't do it. And then I started crying and screaming, no, I won't kill anything for you. Okay, so now they know I don't kill. At the time, I'm still disoriented. I don't know what's going on. I don't kill the alien. And then there are some things that started taking place that was just incredible. Remember earlier I was saying I would complain about, why can't you show up normally?
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm in bed. Actually, I'm visiting my parents at the time when they were alive. And that was over in the Miami area. And I was laying in the room that I laid in, and there was this loud cracking sound, like thunder inside your head like you never heard so loud. And the next thing I know, I was elevated above the bed, and my arms were swimming under me like, whoa, whoa. And then in the doorway, three of them appear, just like the movie. We're here. Okay. All right. So that was a scene in itself. Now, this is an event that took place over about that's going to lead into the mass abduction and then this 8-week period of building this trust. I'm driving down the road and I see a diamond-shaped craft paving through the road in front of me, going through the road, the top of it. And when I say diamond shaped, it's like a pyramid on the top and a pyramid upside down on the bottom. But the top side was going across the highway. Half of it was under the ground. And this thing goes up into the sky. I stopped my car as I was proceeding down. My jaw dropped. I hit the brake, and I'm looking at this thing. It's about the size of two houses. And then there was a telepathic message from it said, which word for word, the keepers, and that's where I got the name, the keepers.
For your book, yeah.
Yeah. The keepers are here to take their people home to a better place. And then what was transmitted into my mind was this, they were collecting seeds of every nature that you can imagine, seeds from plants, seeds from trees, little plants. This whole thing was filled with all kinds of plant life forms. And what it was a craft that identifies itself. So again, they have the science, you know, to pass through solid matter. Okay, now these things are, you know, coming along like this. Now, I get pulled another time, and this was even more remarkable. Remember me telling you that this is all in succession, that I was always paralyzed sitting at this bench, right? I get pulled, and when I come to, instead of being paralyzed, I'm on board. I'm standing up in that same room I had been in for all those years, confined, leaning against that table with my hand up against the table. And I just started tapping myself and hitting myself and going, I can't believe this. I'm not paralyzed. And I saw, I'm thinking, all right, where should I do? What should I do? Where should I go? And I decided I was just going to stay right there. And in from the corridor comes the two grays, and one was holding a black box. And they started walking towards me. I showed no aggression. I didn't run from them. I just stood there, looked at them. You don't want to look in their eyes too long. I would look at their eyes and look at the floor and look at their eyes and look at the floor. And they're holding out this black box. And they laid it on the table that used to be in front of me and pushed it towards me with their bony fingers. And I said, what the hell is this? And telepathically back, it's a gift. It's a gift for you. And I said, what kind of gift is this? What do you want me to do with it? It's just a black box, about the size of a cigar box, only square. And do with it as you will. Those were their exact words. And they turned around and walked out.
Did you know what it was?
I had no clue, George. And I was afraid to touch it at first. And I'm looking at it, and I would walk around the table, and I would look at this black box. I got this newfound freedom. I'm not paralyzed. I touched it with my forefinger, and I tapped on it, and I didn't die. It didn't hurt me. So I realized it was safe to touch at least. So I picked it up, and I put it by my ear, and I started shaking it. I couldn't hear anything in it. And then I clutched it with both hands, and I tried to find a lid, and I was pulling it with all my strength, really, really hard. It wouldn't open. I couldn't find an opening. It was perfectly square, perfectly black, absorbent black. And then I put it on the floor, and I wedged it between my feet, and I was trying to pull it up that way to get a little more leverage. That didn't work. And then I took it, and I raised it above my head, and I was about to slam it on that table. And a telepathic voice said, you didn't try to open it gently. And I went, oh. And then I just gently put my hand over the top of it, and I pulled, and it opened. And then the most horrible stench that you could ever smell came out of that thing. And there was this black tarry substance about 3 inches thick with these glass tubes of different sizes.
Was it like something dead?
It smelled like something like roadkill, only 10 times more powerful. And I yelled at him. I go, what the hell kind of gift can I hope, – hope hell isn't a bad thing to say.
You can get away with that.
All right. I yelled that out. What the kind of gift is this? And they go, it's a gift. It's a gift for you. We extracted it from your lungs.
Whoa.
Whoa. And I was a pretty heavy smoker at the time.
Did you have cancer?
No, but I smoked a lot.
Jeez.
And so I believed it because I felt a lot better. So here's how this, you know, these things are starting to evolve. And so now I'm moving around, and now, you know, they're trusting me in that manner. And, you know, it was weird. Then I, you know, I get pulled again, and now they're going to show me their handiwork. And I thought I would never get to this point with them. And, this part here was pretty amazing. Things were changing, and they were changing after 6 years. It was almost exactly 6 years of all that bad stuff happening to this, to understand their nature, and to make sure that I wasn't going to, you know, tear up the ship and tear them apart. And I learned that they have an ironic and somewhat of a cynical sense of humor, if you can believe it, a gray. And I was at home, and I was sleeping on the bed. I was on my back, and something started shaking my ankles in my sleep. And this is going to be kind of funny when I tell you, and strange as all this stuff is. And it kept shaking my ankles, and then I opened up my eyes, and here's a gray in a suit from the 1930s, like a mafia-style suit, complete with a hat. And he goes telepathically. He puts actually a hologram face in front of his face, so the mouth would open and close like someone's talking to you.
Did it look like a human face when they did that?
Yes. He goes, "The boss wants to see you." In those exact words. I said, "You're scaring me, man. You are scaring me." And then the face morphed into a friendly face and said, "Look, you're going to be okay. You're going to be fine. I didn't mean to scare you. You'll be all right."
They were trying to be humorous, but...
Yes, and they found myself outside. I blacked out. I found myself outside in the backyard. I lived on the beach at that time. And the beach was across the street from my house, I should say. And he escorted me. He was holding my hand. And this was about 3:34 in the morning. He escorted me through my backyard. There was no fence. Across this, the street, and I got scared because I had peripheral vision, and I could see him, but I couldn't see much more than that, and I was afraid as we were crossing the street, like, is a car going to hit us? And we walked right to the edge of the shore, and he had his hand. I had my hand on top of his hand, and we were standing there next to each other and just standing there, and I was saying to myself, just looking at the beach, I was saying to myself, I can run away. I can hit this being. I can ask them a million questions. What I've learned about their nature over all the years is don't ask questions. They'll only let you know what they want you to know. Over time, you can, if it's something I think they want you to, and I could run away, and I was staring out at the Gulf of Mexico. It was calm night. There were stars, and there was a beacon light that usually has when a sailboat is mooring and it's just sitting there so, you know, other boats don't, you know, run into it literally. I thought it was a beacon light, and I didn't run away. And all of a sudden, that beacon light opened up into this rectangle about the size of about 20 feet wide and 15 feet high, an extremely bright light. And he said, "Step into it," telepathically. And I walked forward, and I couldn't see because it was so bright, and I stubbed my toe on whatever was. It was a craft. It was the doorway to one of their crafts. And I said, and I hurt my toe, and I yelled, "Ouch!" And he says, well, step up. I said, "Yeah, well, now you tell me." When I got in there, I got into the room, and they left me alone again, and this time I decided to explore. And here we go into the hybrid program before they fully developed it. And I walked down this corridor. Light was emanating from everywhere, but yet nowhere at the same time. You couldn't really find a light source, but it was dimly lit. Nothing was ever brightly lit, by the way. Dimly lit. And it and the hallway was narrow, you know, to fit them. The height was just above, maybe a couple inches above my head. So I'm 5'8", so it might have been 5'10".
Hold on for a second, Jim. We'll come back, finish that story, then we'll talk about some of the witnesses that you had mentioned. Maybe they've come forward. Maybe they've seen things. We'll be back in a moment. If you're a Coast Insider, our Tuesday chat will be with Michael Cremo. Starts at 8 p.m. Pacific time. Michael Cremo, of course, Forbidden Archaeology. Make sure you're lined up. That room fills up awfully fast. We're going to come back in a moment with Jim Sparks and talk more about his life, The Keepers, on Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back. Jim Sparks with us. Jim, do you think in the ancient days these entities were misconstrued to be gods?
I think that with the science that they have, they've been even to the today, could be misconstrued to be demons, ghosts, spirits.
Mm-hmm.
Back in those early years, definitely. No doubt about it.
You had mentioned earlier when I asked you if there were any witnesses, and you said not at the time, but you said, but I do want to talk about some of them later on. What did you mean?
Oh, well, you know, what I'm doing is I'm creating some depth into the story as I go with it, and then we can get to that. And you know, how it led to this, and then it just makes it easier to swallow, and then it, you just get a better understanding that way. And, you know, if I can mention, too, you know, I committed all of this to memory, and, you know, I'm dedicated to it. I want to get the word out. You know as well as I do that those of us that write aren't in it for the money, and those of us who are doing this work aren't in it for the money. It's the love of the work. And but what I had done, if I can mention that on my website, jim-sparks.com, I put together a special price for the book for, you know, your listeners.
Do you sign it for them?
Actually, I don't. I don't. Not that I can't down the road, actually, but at this time I'm not. But anyway, that's what I did for your listeners. So they go on jim-sparks.com. But anyway, back to that. See, what was leading to this was the fact that when I got into this craft, and then I was able to walk around, and I walked into this room, and there was a corridor, and I walked in this room, and then what I saw was rows and rows and rows of gurneys with these hybrid things, which were the ones that weren't fully done yet, kind of thing, laying on their backs, all staring into the ceiling. But what I got from them as I looked into them, they scared me. And what I got from looking at it was, again, it was, I don't know what they were. I know it was part of something they were making. It could be what they created for the worker beings. I know it's something they wanted me to see because they allowed me to go in there. And I started screaming and yelling, and I was panicking. They're dead, they're dead, they're dead, because I was scared. And again, here's another reason why it's hard to be with them. So you pretty much got to be a medical professional to be able to stomach some of these things. And at that time, and they create screen imaging. One of them came into the room, and he created an image in my mind where one of them sat up and said, "We're not dead, we're fine," and changed the face of it. So I was allowed to you know, roam around in that regard. I got pulled another time, and as the story goes, I got pulled another time, and look, this is, you know, this is an adult thing, but it's a fact of what they used to do. Mm-hmm. And every time I got pulled, there was always semen extraction before I left. It was a regular thing, and it's not very pleasant. And when it puts the reality of these things in you, if you see what I'm saying.
It's, yeah.
But when I had got pulled, I was on a gurney, and they screen imaged two very attractive women. And they were standing next to me. I was, as I was at a 45-degree angle on this gurney. And to make it more of a pleasant experience, like there were, you know, attractive girls, and they just happened to look like exactly what I'm attracted to. Imagine that, right?
Go figure.
Yeah. And then they put the apparatus on my groin, which I couldn't see. And I started shaking my head to shake off the screen image, and the two girls disappeared. And then I saw the apparatus on my groin, but this time I wasn't paralyzed. And there was two worker beings to my left and two worker beings to my right. And in the middle was an actual gray, the living being, doing the procedure. And I shoved him in the chest with my right foot. And he went lunging, and he went falling backwards.
Were there ever other humans in there?
Yes, during a mass abduction. There's one I want to talk about, yeah, that I should talk about in particular, that there was an interaction with, because they're experts in not letting you see or remember or whatever reason. I never got to see anybody that I've seen on board and interacted with, but there was this one particular man that the way the event unfolded, I had interaction with this person more than the normal, and it was kind of a personal thing to keep him calm as things had flowered there with other people. And that was the end of that. Like always, you know, I'm brought back, I'm home, I'm safe, I didn't die, I didn't get hurt. And about three or four months later, I happened to be at a conference, and this is before I was a lecturer, and this is before I was a speaker, and came out. I was just went to a conference, and I was standing outside taking a break by myself, and here comes this guy, and he's walking down the sidewalk, and he's got one of those huge cameras, you know, that they use for television, you know, those that you have to hoist on your shoulder.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And he's walking with this thing. And my heart almost came out of my mouth. I mean, it was just flying through my chest. And I went, oh, my God, it's that guy. And he walked by me. And then he kept on walking. And all of a sudden, he stopped. I didn't say a word. I didn't say nothing. I didn't say one word. He stopped, and the camera started rocking back and forth like he lost his balance. And he turned around, and he says, do I know you? And I immediately said to myself, do not reveal that I know who this person is and keep it that way just to see what would happen. And I said, no, I don't think so. And I said, what are you doing here? And he says, well, you know, I don't believe in these UFOs. This is nothing for me. He says, I've been contracted to come out here and film something for his client. And anyway, he started talking to me. And then he started developing interest, and he told me, why are you here? And all of a sudden, he started changing. His whole attitude started changing. This is a person that doesn't want to come forward. I know that one day he will, because it's amazing what I saw happen, because I still didn't let on to him that I had this interaction with him on board. And he was working very hard to get closer to me. I'm watching what they implanted in this guy's mind, to see what the people are doing after they implant certain things for this evolving process. And this was a perfect, perfectly controlled environment. Again, I'm not a scientist, but I take a science point of view as best as I can with logic and as much sense as I can and anchor there so I don't get lost in the maze of confusion with all of this. And he was gravitating towards me, and all of a sudden he was lit up on the subject. He wanted to film the subject. He did some work on the subject with this. He did some videos on the subject with this. I was seeing him week after week. A couple months would go by. And then this person turned into this amazing, because the message is environmental, the message is to get the facts out, from a person who isn't even this person, who went on to develop whenever there was a natural disaster and people didn't have water, he developed with a German scientist a water filtration system that works on solar, it works on wind, it'll pump out 30 gallons an hour of pure water. You can literally put it in as gross as it sounds, you can put it almost in a cesspool, and it would give you 30 gallons of clean water. As a matter of fact, then he went on to develop biological fuel for jet airplanes, for jet aircraft, all in for the benefit of environment. And he had some amazing breakthroughs. So I can go on into more detail, and it might peg exactly who the person is, but the person is pretty known. And so, but during the course of this, he said, I know you. And he says, it's been bothering me and bothering me and bothering me. And then he came out and said, I said, that's right. And I said, that's me. And that was you. And
he was one, too.
He was one. Yeah. And so, that was a pretty good thing.
You were talking earlier about time travelers, Jim. What have they mastered?
Well, you've got all types. You've got time travelers that are from the near future, and I call them within the first 500 years. But, you know, remember I mentioned earlier that I had actually experienced it myself?
Right.
In a most peculiar way. Now, again, these things are revealed to me over the years so I can stomach it or swallow it, because I never expected it to happen. It was just, I'm at home, And this was a few years ago. I'm at home, and I'm laying on the sofa. Now, there's going to be a reason for me getting into this detail. And like everybody else, I have my hand, my head is resting on my hand, and I'm simply watching television. And then that whirling, whipping sound started to happen as time to get pulled. But only it was a hum. Well, let me back up a little bit. I'm watching television. I got my hand on my head, I get up. This is before all of that happened. I get up off the sofa. I walk through the living room. I go around to the island counter where I have an aquarium. I have a look at the fish. I'm looking at them. I turn the corner where the aquarium was. I go into the area where the refrigerator was in the kitchen. I open up the refrigerator door. The light goes on. I take a sip of soda. I take a bite of a sandwich. I shut the door. I come back around, and I go back and lay on the sofa and proceed to watch television. Then the hum of the pull starts to take place. But instead of pulling me, it just stayed at a low, like a drone sound. And then it got loud, and then it got whirling, and then it got whipping, and bam, I'm on board. I'm on board. Procedures take place that take approximately 3 hours. Time is always distorted. You may, and I might add this too, but you can be up there 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, or 8 hours, and you're back to return here, and maybe only 20 minutes go by.
If that.
Yeah, right. You know about these things. Of course you would. And so it's fascinating. Once you're not scared anymore, it's a fascinating thing. But, however, a good 3 hours go by easily with the procedures that took place. I get back. They bring me back the way they came me. They got me. And for the first time ever, I got brought back 2 minutes before I left. And the reason I know it was 2 minutes, because I'm sitting there with my head back. They put me back the same place that they took me, which was my head was resting on the sofa in front of the television set. And in front of me was me with its back turned. And I could see me. And I watched the other me walk through the living room, go to the aquarium. I didn't say anything. I was in shock. I didn't want to say anything. I didn't know what would happen. He was looking at the fish like I had done earlier, turned into the kitchen, opened up the refrigerator door. I saw the light go on. Tinker in the refrigerator, drink the soda, eat part of the sandwich, and shut the door, and now that me started coming back towards me, and I knew right at that point when he turned around the island counter, he would see me, and I was scared to death. What's me going to do when me sees me? He didn't see me. He just kept walking right towards me as if I wasn't there and got right at me and came like into me. So, I still shake a little bit when I think about this. What does it say? Does it say that both of you can occupy the same space at the same time? Yes. Does it say that one of them does not observe it and the other one does? Yes. Did it mean that I got back 2 minutes earlier than when I left? Yes. What can you conclude that as being? Time travel.
It's got to be.
Yeah. And so it's a gift. So it's a gift of the, you know, that type of not, the, you know, that knowledge thereof. And you know, over time, you know, I learned how to handle different events.
Is government aware of what's going on, Jim?
Okay, this is an area that's kind of touchy. You've got, in my opinion, I've broken it down in years of experience as three types of governing bodies. First, you have the governing body that we deal with every day at face value. our senators, our congresspeople, our presidents, our, you know, whatever the local government is, every form of government. And I would say better, I would say literally probably 99% of them or better are clueless. They're just like us in a sense, yeah. Clueless. Then you got this other form of government that hides things from us that think they know what's going on. So this is the second group, meaning that they have down crafts, they're back engineering, they have cadavers, and that's the form of government that doesn't talk to us at all.
Everything we've heard,
yeah,
they've had.
Yeah. Now we've got this, you could say, elite form that are so deep into black ops, so deep into it, that they have interaction with extraterrestrials. And now the ones that, you know, have the, they think they're on top of things. When I say back engineering, they're still working on things. They really have nothing that's going to do anything as what the third form has. And that's the three types that we deal with. So that's the way, that's the best way for me to answer it. Dabbling a little further into that, I think this interaction is in much more depth than I expected, coming from experience, because I have had experience where I have seen military personnel. I had an experience where they talk to me. They're not afraid to. And here I am somewhere abducted, and I've got human beings who are in some, you know, I think predominantly, and look, yeah, I am a little biased because I, you know, I'm an American and I love my country, it's the United States. But at the same time, I think primarily that the United States is definitely, you know, the top dog as far as interaction goes with them. I'm not saying perhaps that these other countries aren't, but, you know, there's Australia, there's here, there's there, there's that. But, you know, that's what I got to see.
Jim, we're going to talk more about this and take some phone calls with you, questions, stories. Jim Sparks, our guest, right here on Coast to Coast AM.